Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 2nd, 2021. Section A. Honoring a Career. Conaway Leaves Congress After 16 Years by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Reacting to the news of Mike Conaway's decision to retire from Congress, a Texas Tribune reporter wrote, "His retirement is a major blow to the state's clout within the Republican conference." Conaway leaves Washington as the ranking member and former chairman of the House Agriculture Committee and had served as chair of the House Ethics Committee. The same Tribune reporter noted that Conaway's decision was somewhat of a surprise to some delegation insiders. Conaway was on track to take GOP leadership of the House Intelligence Committee in the coming years. But in July, Conaway said it was time to go. He leaves after winning his first election in 2005. The district was drawn up after then-Speaker of the Texas House, Tom Craddock, insisted on a district where Midland-Odessa would be a main population area. His goal in representing the nearly 30 counties of District 11 was to do a job worthy of the people's trust in you. For years, many Conaway detractors seemed to focus on troubled asset relief program vote from 2008, which he said was the vote he lost the most sleep over. The CPA said in retrospect, "It was one of those few times where I had to vote my conscience and vote my own experience and my own understanding of the circumstances versus what I was being encouraged to do from back home." He said that money spent on TARP has been earned back by and collected by the Fed. If the TARP vote really impacted constituents' faith in their representative, it was hard to tell. He never received less than 70% of the vote in a Republican primary after the 2008 vote, and never less than 78% of the vote on a general election. Conaway, more recently, earned distinction for his work as chairman of the House Agricultural Committee, including passage of the 2018 Farm Bill, and as the person who led the House investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. Conaway said he is proud that his committee was the first to finish and that not one of our conclusions was refuted by any of that other work that was done. There will be much to unpack from Conaway's time in Washington. He said this week he is confident that San Angelo Republican August Pfluger has the ability to represent the district well. As for the immediate future, he and Suzanne will spend time in Seacrest Beach, Florida, where they have a home, and then return to Midland. He said that somehow his resume showed up down here, and I'm getting offers to drive a Coca-Cola truck route or be a security guy at the mall. So I've got a bright future. The following is a question and answer between Stuart Doreen of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and Mike Conaway. MRT, what was your welcome to Congress moment? Conaway, Suzanne and I had flown up for the swearing-in like they're doing right now, and we get off the plane there in D.C., and there's a young Marine lieutenant standing there, a Marine poster kid. And he says, "Mr. Conaway, please come with me." And my wife looks at me, and she's got those big wide eyes. He's a handsome little guy, and so he marches us down from the gate to the terminal. We collect our bags, and then they escort us into downtown. And she actually said, "How did he know who we are?" Bob May at the time was chairman of the House Admin Committee, and he had worked out an arrangement with the Department of Defense to have each new member greeted at Reagan Airport like that. And so I guess that was probably my first thought of, wow, I may be in the big time after all. What will you miss about serving in Congress? Well, I just love the job. It's multifaceted, obviously, and it's hard to pick anything most, but my team that I've been able to put in place over all these 16 years, and it's been relatively stable. I've had some great people come and go, but these young men and women, and they are young compared to me, I'm a little codger, they are some of the finest that our nation has produced. They're loyal, dedicated, patriotic, super intelligent. And I've had them on my personal staff, the Ethics Committee staff, and then, of course, the Ag Committee staff. And I think I will miss working with them day to day the most. Sue and I have been blessed with a really good family, and we've been able to add to that family over these 16 years with some young folks that we basically, in our hearts, adopted as family, because they're just some of the best this country's ever produced. So I'll miss them. I'll miss the town hall meetings and working with constituents, being back in the district and making the rounds. I really missed that this past year because we didn't get to do nearly as much of that as I wanted to, or that I normally certainly would have done. Then it's just doing the job. It's been a terrific run, and about half of me hates to see it come to a close, and the other half that wants to make my wife happy. What was your favorite perk of being a congressman? Before the first probably 10 years, there was a parking lot at DCA, Reagan National Airport, that members of the House, the Senate, and diplomats could use. It was right there by the door. You just drive right in, park, and walk into the airport. And then they began this multi-year remodeling project for DCA, and they took all that away. That was probably the perk that was the best because you could just drive right in, get out, and your car would be there when you came back the next week. I guess the day-to-day thing was just being able to go through security without having to strip down and toss all your stuff in the bucket. That's a pretty good perk as well. Just being able to go anywhere that you wanted to go without having to go through security. What was the one vote that created the most sleepless nights for you? The TARP vote is the only one that comes to mind, and I voted correctly on that. The one vote that I wish I had back was the Budget Control Act of 2011. But the TARP vote probably gave me the most trouble because, you know, the folks back in West Texas during that financial meltdown really weren't affected by it all that much. And I was getting this immense pressure to vote against it. And I've been in banking for 6+ years, and I knew the system was legitimately under immense pressure. The commercial paper market was about to collapse. There were some really bad things happening, and I knew in my heart that the right thing to do was to vote for it. But I was getting this pressure from back home to vote against it. Voting for it was the right policy way to go, but it was one of those few times where I had to vote my conscience and vote my own experience and my own understanding of the circumstances versus what I was being encouraged to do from back home. I remember the first time we voted on it, I voted against it. And we all came home for a couple of days, and I got ticker tape parades and people patting me on the back and all this kind of stuff. But I knew in my heart of hearts that when it came back up, we would have changed it and fixed to the point where I was going to vote for it. So I was really torn that whole weekend back home. Everybody was bragging on me and all this kind of good stuff, but that's the one that gave me the most trouble, from a do what everybody's telling you to do or do what you know is right. And in my heart, I know what I did was right. All that money that was spent on TARP has been earned back and collected by the Fed. So net, it's been positive, but there are still a lot of folks who disagree with my analysis, most of whom didn't really have any deep understanding of banking. They just didn't want the federal government intruding like that. And I understand that, but like I said, I've been in banking long enough to know this was a real deal and that I needed to support it. Any regrets about what didn't get accomplished? Well, yeah, we didn't balance the budget the entire time I was there, and no balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. There are lots of things out there that people talk about doing to our Constitution, but a balanced budget amendment is head and shoulders above anything else you could ever do. You made a brief reference to the increase in debt while I was there, and the numbers speak for themselves, and I was a part of all those zillion decisions that got us to this point. But not being able to have better fiscal discipline to the system, and that's just shared responsibility, no single member is going to be able to fix that deal. I mentioned that one vote that I do regret, the Budget Control Act of 2011. Former Republican Speaker of the House John Boehner sold us the idea that this special committee would come up with enough cuts to mandatory spending to make it work, and that it would be so terrible to institute sequestration that we wouldn't do it, that it would be the sword of Damocles that would make us get there, that would make us address mandatory spending. which is where the bulk of the problem lies. And it didn't work. The special committee's idea didn't pass, and so sequestration kicked in, and it did immense harm to the Department of Defense over those years, and still has. That's the one bill I voted for that I wish I hadn't. It's interesting, most of the folks who cling to sequestration and budget caps and other things out there that were around in 2011 voted against that bill, and it nets now that they cling to it like the Holy Grail. What's the one thing you're most proud of accomplishing during your time in Washington? To do the work in D.C., and it takes 217 friends, plus the speaker has to be one of those friends, and the 60 over in the Senate, the president, and that kind of stuff. Getting stuff done in D.C. is a tall order. But back home, the work that has been done by my constituent service team in the 6 offices that we have, every day somebody's life in the district was made just a little less difficult by the great work my team was doing, whether it was income taxes, IRS, Social Security, or VA, or INS, or need a passport immediately. All those kind of things that people have to have happen, my guys just were exemplary at it. I'm most proud of that body of work that contributed, in no small part, to me getting to 75 and 80% of the vote every time. It was just the great work my team back home was doing. The work they've done over the past 16 years is what I'm proud most of. Legislatively, it would be, of course, the Farm Bill of 2018 as the biggest deal that I've got to get done. But there was a crop insurance issue that I led the fight on in 2015, getting cotton back under the Farm Bill the way it should have been. That happened before the 2018 Farm Bill. I'm proud of the report that we got done on the Intelligence Committee on the Russia investigation. It doesn't get a lot of play these days, but if you go back and look at it, not one conclusion was refuted by any of the other folks out there. Yeah, I was a little worried about it when we did our first, and it came out pretty darn quickly. In comparison, Mueller had unlimited money and 40-plus investigators, and the Senate's just now finishing up their work. So I was a little concerned that they might find something that we didn't, or find something that we should have found that we didn't. And not one of our conclusions was refuted by any of the other work that was done. So I'm really proud of what we got done on the Russia investigation report. Why is August Pfluger the right person to lead District 11 into the future? Well, one, he outworked anybody else in the field. I didn't endorse anybody, but I offered to help every one of them, and August took me up on it. And he would say, hey, who do I need to talk to in this county or this town? And I have him a list of names and would have given anybody a list of names. And I'd go back by there and somebody was like, hey, I just talked to August Pfluger. Or, hey, I'm about to talk to August Pfluger. So he outworked everybody else in the race by head and shoulders. And it showed because he won without a runoff. That work ethic that he demonstrated there looked similar to the work ethic that I tried to put in for 16 years, making the rounds that and doing the job that was supposed to get done. Second, he's a super smart guy. He's got a good background in the military, and that's becoming less representative in Congress, so it's good to have that veteran. I'm a veteran. He's a career veteran. It's good to have that perspective in Congress as well, and he's just a good people, a good, decent, God-fearing man with a terrific family. And so I've really got really high hopes and expectations for him to surpass whatever it is I might have been able to do in these 16 years during his term. What advice have you offered him about being the representative of an entire district? Well, that was it. That's it. The folks of Mason County, all 5,000 or 6,000, deserve your attention as much as the folks in Tom Green County. And they need to be able to see and talk to you and have the access of those in those counties where you get most of your votes. Make sure you're making the rounds. And then, if I was on the phone with you right now, based on my last walking off that floor Monday night after my final vote, would it be just to savor every single moment? Because nobody gets to go forever. Our view. Conaway represented an entire district well. The biggest compliment we can hand a politician is that he or she represented all those who voted for him or her, and not just a select few. Mike Conaway did that during his time as the elected leader of Texas's 11th Congressional District. Even a district specifically drawn up to favor a candidate from Midland-Odessa, it would have been nearly impossible to identify Conaway as a graduate of Permian High School in Odessa or a resident of Midland based on his total impact in Congress. Go ahead and try. It can't be done. Mike Conaway told the Reporter-Telegram it was important to represent the entire district, making an effort to travel to every county twice a year during non-COVID times. Toward the end of his tenure, that meant hitting nearly 30 counties. There are fewer counties in the states of Vermont and New Hampshire combined. He made sure that the interests of people in San Angelo were heard. That is where Goodfellow Air Base resides. He also made sure agrarian matters were handled. Congressman Mike Conaway continued the outstanding legacy of Texan leaders, the U.S. House Committee on Agriculture, with distinction. Texas Farm Bureau President Russell Benning wrote to the Reporter-Telegram. He accomplished much for Texas farmers and ranchers during his tenure as chairman. His successful completion of the 2018 Farm Bill in the same year it was introduced is considered his greatest achievement. He exhibited during 5 months of intense Farm Bill negotiations the same type of determination, focus, and hard work farm and ranch families are known for. Texas Farm Bureau will always be grateful for his steadfast dedication to Texas agriculture. It wasn't that Conaway wasn't interested in energy issues. As the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's Ben Shepherd wrote, the Permian Basin has benefited from the strong leadership of Congressman Conaway for over a decade and a half. It has been a staunch supporter of the oil and gas industry and was one of our greatest champions on efforts like lifting the crude oil export ban. But as Conaway told the Reporter-Telegram, I worked really hard to make sure that I was going places I needed to go. Are you listening, August Pfluger? You take the oath this weekend with the highest of expectations and very large shoes to fill. As Conaway told the Reporter-Telegram, Pfluger showed a ton of political determination, political talent, in dominating a 10-person field in the Republican primary. Conaway also described his replacement as a person of high character and a God-fearing man, something that the people of District 11 will appreciate. But in the end, Congressman-elect Pfluger, this newspaper and our section of District 11 likely will measure you in two ways. Is this district in better shape than when you found it, and when will your representation cover an entire district? If you are unsure to what either means, give Mike Conaway a call. He knows what it means to answer yes. Local funeral homes overwhelmed by COVID deaths, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Local funeral homes are operating near capacity as they struggle to keep up with a high number of deaths in a short time related to coronavirus pandemic. Many of Midland's 7 funeral homes have recently had 25 to 30 families waiting to bury loved ones at a time, according to Sparky Clark, owner of Willowbrook Funeral Home on Florida Avenue. Bobby Garcia, co-owner and funeral director at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, said they purchased an additional cooler because of the rise in the number of deaths from COVID-19. They're all about a week behind on services. We're overwhelmed, he said, when asked how he and his staff were coping. We're trying to do everything as normally as possible so families can at least have that last chance to see their loved ones. The delay for services is in part because bodies infected with the coronavirus must be quarantined for 3 to 4 days before a viewing can be held. Garcia said they have 11 viewing rooms between their two locations, and they were working on 16 bodies this week. Midland's 4 cemeteries are also serving more families than usual, creating an additional delay in when loved ones can be laid to rest. Those cemeteries only have a certain number of services they can accommodate per day. It's a first-come, first-serve, said Clark. We have had families that have had to wait an additional 2 to 3 days just because the cemetery is being packed out as well. The funeral director said families have been patient about the wait. Most families are very understanding because they know the severity of the situation with the pandemic. Are they happy about it? Not necessarily, but they understand with the additional deaths that are occurring. The personal protective equipment staff when working on bodies, gloves, masks, gowns, and face shields has stayed the same, but they're going through equipment more frequently. So far, the director said they have been able to order what they need and haven't experienced any shortages. The greatest worry for employees is exposure to the coronavirus, though Garcia said they were able to receive their first doses of the vaccine this week. Clark said there's always a risk of contracting a communicable disease in their line of work. We got into this business knowing that we would deal with situations like this, he said. We're well aware of the risk every day, even outside of a pandemic. We make sure that we protect ourselves as well as other members of the community with every case, whether it be from COVID or not, because we don't even know the cause of death until the death certificate's signed off on. There have been reports from California to Wyoming to Ohio of funeral homes overwhelmed by COVID-19 deaths, with funeral directors saying they're as exhausted as frontline hospital workers. In Midland County, 185 people have died from COVID-19, and 39 people died from COVID-19 in December alone. Health Department schedules all 200 vaccine doses in one day, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Appointments for all 200 of the COVID-19 vaccine doses the Midland Health Department received were booked on the first day they were available. A post on the City of Midland's Facebook page, updated at 5:23 p.m. Wednesday, stated that all slots had been filled. The Health Department received the vaccine Tuesday night and began scheduling appointments Wednesday morning. Those who'd like to be added to the queue for when the next shipment arrives can fill out a form at midlandtexas.gov/forms.aspx?FID=159. The online form was created after the Health Department received an influx of calls regarding scheduling appointments for the vaccine. Whitney Craig with the Health Department said in an interview Wednesday that the phone lines were going in and out because of the high call volume. The Health Department received 200 doses of the Moderna vaccine as part of Phase 1B of the vaccine rollout, which includes individuals 65 and older or those with certain chronic health conditions. Qualifying medical conditions include, but are not limited to, cancer, chronic kidney disease, COPD, heart conditions such as heart failure, coronary artery disease or cardiomyopathies, solid organ transplantation, obesity, sickle cell disease, and type 2 diabetes. Pregnant women also are eligible to receive the vaccine during the Phase 1B distribution. The Health Department is expecting to receive an additional 200 doses, but it's unknown when the next shipment will arrive. Those who were able to book appointments for the first 200 doses will begin receiving the vaccine on Monday. The conscience of the newsroom heads off to a deserved retirement. A commentary by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. This week was the last for Mary Dearen at the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Those who know Mary know that she has been the glue that has held the editorial department together during my 10-plus years as editor. But her role goes beyond the person responsible for reporter development, line editing, organization of editorial sections, and being the director of the Reporter-Telegram spelling bee. She's been the conscience of the newsroom, our moral compass. If anyone has an idea, including me, we ran it by Mary. Failure to do so ended up with the most un-Christmas-like front page in this newspaper's history. That year, we opted to showcase our newsmaker of the year in that last Sunday edition of the year, which happened to be Christmas Day. Denying our readers the annual recognition of Jesus' birth didn't go over well. Neither was using the word damn in the headline. Mary said, "Don't do it." We didn't listen. It was not our finest hour. For those who don't know, Mary has retired. She gave us more than a year's notice, and as it turned out, she was serious about leaving. In terms of the skills she brought to the paper, there has never been a person that I felt more dramatic impact on the Reporter-Telegram. And yes, I worked side by side with Ed Todd. To know Mary was to understand she expected the best of the people in the newsroom. Anything that came before her was looked at with a critical eye. She forced everyone else to live up to that standard. I'm not sure it was because she felt our readers deserved better as much as she felt we ought to take that type of pride in our work. Whether you were a newbie reporter or the person officed next to her for around a decade and was allegedly her boss, we were held to Mary's standard, and let me tell you that our readers are better because of it. The first thing I did when I knew I was going to become the editor of the Reporter-Telegram was hire Mary Dearen as the managing editor. She had come to the Midland in the 1980s and worked as city editor on the copy desk, as the lifestyle editor, and finally as the managing editor. She worked with hundreds of people during her decades in Midland and can tell you about the larger-than-life personalities that walked the halls when the Reporter-Telegram was in a different place. In addition to the aforementioned Ed Todd, there were those who stood the test of time, department leaders like Jim Servatius, Gary Ott, and Meta Minton. Then there were the people who weren't as much co-workers as friends, people like Liz Edwin, Megan Buck, and Meredith Moriak Wright. Business was business, but chances are that conversations were more of a personal nature. Mary is married to Patrick Dearen, an award-winning author. He, too, is a Reporter-Telegram alum, and Mary is also his line editor. They have a son named Wesley. Wesley has worked in intelligence, having spent time in Washington, D.C., and even abroad. Over the years, I haven't heard as much about his work as I have from the proud mom about how her son is finding his own way in the world. Every time someone I know has heard about Mary's retirement, I am usually asked, "You couldn't stop her?" I often replied, "I wouldn't dare try." You see, Mary has put her life on hold over the past 10 years. When she should have been pacing herself toward retirement, she put in more hours and days a week than anyone in the building. Again, this was a person that was not going to let the changes in our business impact the product we put out. It remains to be seen what the post-Mary Dearen time at the Reporter-Telegram will bring. The second question I am asked when someone hears Mary is retiring is, what will you do without her? The truth is, no one replaces the person who carried this paper on her back for the better part of a decade. We will venture forward. As a former boss once told me, the paper will be here longer than any of us. Lastly, it goes without saying that I can't imagine my life moving forward without being able to talk shop or talk about life with Mary Dearen. Our discussions about things beyond Reporter-Telegram business meant as much as the loyalty she showed to the Reporter-Telegram and its readers. I'm not going to lie, there has been a lot of change at the paper in the past couple of years, too much for me. In fact, I'm as tired of mentioning the change probably as much as you are reading about it. But in terms of what we do and my life moving forward, Mary Dearen's retirement will be the most impactful of them all. This is The Mary Dearen I Know by Jane Wolfe, Reporter-Telegram contributor. The Mary I know is a bright, caring, hard-working, disciplined, high-energy, faithful friend. The Mary I know is inspiring. She walks several miles in the early morning every day, rain or shine. She picks up coins along the way for the Muscular Dystrophy Association in memory of her sister Anne. The Mary I know is a consummate professional journalist. The Midland Reporter-Telegram and all its readers have been the lucky recipients of her eagle eye, her phenomenal vocabulary, her nose for news, and her extraordinary commitment, both to this community and to the highest standards of professional journalism. The Mary I know is a devout Catholic who practices her faith without fanfare and genuinely affirms the faiths of others. She is a stellar wife and mother. The two men in her life, Pat and Wesley, are among the most loved folks on the planet. The Mary I know is the quintessential friend, loyal, caring, funny, affirming, and dedicated. She keeps up with her many friends, far and near, their kids, their careers, their joys, and their sorrows. The Mary I know is an optimistic realist. Though she looks life straight in the eye, she also looks for and finds the good in everyone. Deep within, the Mary I know is a wellspring of grace from which she responds to whatever is happening in the world, in our country, in Texas, in Midland, and in her own life. How grateful I am for this Mary I'm privileged to know. Parting words from Mary Dearen, retired managing editor. When I started at the Midland Reporter-Telegram in August 1981, little did I know I'd still be here more than 39 years later. My plan was to return to Colorado after a couple of years. It seems God had other plans. Many readers don't know my name. I've held many positions over the years, but reporter was among them, so I haven't had any bylines. But I hope that what I have contributed has made the Reporter-Telegram worthwhile for our readers. My job at the Reporter-Telegram has brought many wonderful people into my life, beginning with my husband Patrick, a former MRT reporter, and the reason I'm in Midland after all these decades of moving here, and our son Wesley. The list of wonderful people is lengthy, but I would like to offer a few of those who have had the most impact on my life. Former staffers Lana Cooper, Meredith Wright, and Elizabeth Madison, Jane Wolfe, Richard Galley, the late Leslie Williams, my church family at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church, and editor Stuart Doreen, who is as much a friend as he is a boss. So this is goodbye as I wait to see what else God has in store for me. Midlanders pay 42 cents less at the pump at the end of 2020. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Drivers in Midland ended 2020 paying an average 42 cents less for gas than at the end of 2019. AAA Texas, in its last report of the year, showed the average price of regular unleaded gas in Midland was $2.07. That is one of the highest differentials among the largest 27 metropolitan areas in the state, and 12 cents higher than the state average year over year. The difference year over year in Odessa was 34 cents, which can be explained partially in the difference in price this week in Midland and Odessa. This week, drivers in Odessa paid an average of $2.13 a gallon, that the highest average in the state. El Paso was second at $2.09. Midland was third, and Abilene was the only other community in the state with an average higher than $2. The average across the state was $1.94. Midland was tied for fourth highest year-over-year in the state. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. In terms of week-over-week price, Midland's and El Paso's dropped 3 cents. Odessa stayed the same. Across the region, Lubbock showed a 1 cent increase, and the price in San Angelo rose 1 cent. AAA Texas, in a press release, reported that throughout 2020, an average for the entire year, drivers in Texas have been filling up with the cheapest gas in 16 years. The annual average for a gallon of regular unleaded statewide this year was $1.87. The last time Texas had a cheaper statewide annual average was 2004 at $1.74. Plus, the Lone Star State average has been below $2 a gallon since mid-March. AAA Texas spokesman Joshua Zuber said in the release, and gas price averages may be headed down again after the year-end holiday travel season concludes in early January. Midland and Odessa top two in the nation for declining rents in 2020. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. Midland and Odessa led the nation in terms of the highest percentage in the decline of rent from 2019 to 2020, according to a business insurance website. Advisor Smith reported this week that nowhere in America did the average price of rent drop more than the oil patch, with oil communities making up the top three on the list. Odessa was number one, Midland was second at number two, and Williston, North Dakota was third. With the price of oil plunging due to a reduction in driving due to the coronavirus pandemic, demand for housing in these communities has fallen substantially. Three cities from the Bay Area of California, San Francisco, Mountain View, and Sunnyvale, rounded out the top six, and the communities across the nation with drops of 20% or more. The next closest city in Texas was Austin at number 63, with a decline of 5% in average rent. The Woodlands and College Station were 64th and 65th. The weighted average rent in Odessa dropped from $924 a month to $661 in November, according to Advisor Smith. Midland's average went from $1,208 to $889. Williston's fell to $897. All three California communities in the top six are still posted average rents higher than $2,000. Earlier this month, it was reported that the median rent of an apartment in Midland had dropped for 18 straight months and is down to $703 for a one-bedroom apartment and $859 for a two-bedroom. That report also showed Midland as having the highest year-over-year percentage drop, with Odessa being number two. Obituaries and death notices. Billie Jean Lively passed peacefully in her sleep on November 24th at home. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.martinfuneralhome. Coleman Bryant Ewing, 28, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, December 29th. A visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Sunday at Nally Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Services will be held on Monday at Calvary Assembly of God. Interment will follow at the American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelsh.com. On Friday, December 25th, James Jimbo Cornwell passed away peacefully, surrounded by his family in Godley, Texas. A funeral memorial service will be determined and scheduled at a later date. John Cecil Rhodes passed away peacefully in Midland on December 30th at the age of 91. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.mpwelsh.com. Paul Thomas Herman went to be with the Lord on October 28th. Tyler James Collier died on Saturday, December 26th. The family will have a visitation 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, January 3rd, at the branch at MPW Nally Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 12 o'clock Monday at Nally Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Doris Marie Brockington passed away on December 25th in Midland. Visitation will be held Tuesday, January 5th from 4 to 5 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland, with a funeral service immediately to follow starting at 5 o'clock. William Kimball, 66, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, December 23rd. Funeral service is set for Saturday, January 2nd at 11 a.m. at Cotton Flat Baptist Church. Burial will follow in Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, January 2nd, 2021. Section A. Pfluger calls for election investigation. By Federico Martinez. Congressman-elect August Pfluger vowed Thursday to support an election challenge to the legitimacy of Joe Biden's presumed general election victory over Donald Trump, which would make Biden the next U.S. president effective January 20th. Pfluger, who will be sworn into office Sunday, said a thorough investigation of possible election fraud is needed before Biden is officially declared president. The U.S. House of Representatives will reconvene January 6th to vote whether to officially ratify election results. For our democracy to function, everyone must trust in it, and millions of Americans right now do not, Pfluger said. We must give the American people a full debate on all matters related to the election and the constitutional issues at hand. For 4 years, Democrats colluded to tear the country apart and question the legitimacy of our democracy. They surrendered any ground to complain about a legitimate process to assess election disputes. Pfluger declined to say whether he believes election fraud cost Trump a victory, or whether he believes there is not enough support to halt the confirmation of Biden in the Democrat-controlled House. Most political experts have predicted the challenge will fail. This country's democracy process is seen as the gold standard throughout the world, Pfluger said. For democracy to work, it must be trusted. And right now, that's not the case. First Babies 2021. Medical Center Hospital is celebrating its first delivery of 2021. Baby Stella Ann McGahan was born at 12:01 a.m. and weighed in at 8 pounds 1 ounce. Her proud parents are Janelle Ann McGahan and John Henry McGahan. This is their first child. The hospital gifted the family a car seat stroller combo, as well as some diapers and wipes, among other gifts. The family also will receive a power bag promoting early literacy among children in the Permian Basin. The Power Bag initiative is the result of a partnership between the Permian Basin Education Foundation, healthcare providers in Midland, Odessa, and several other community organizations and businesses. The Power Bag includes a Milestone Moments book, CDC Age Level Baby book, a Scholastic book, baby toy keys, and website information for additional resources. Odessa Regional Medical Center, ORMC, shared that the first baby of the new year was born at ORMC at 4:48 a.m. January 1st, 2021. The baby girl named Ava was 6 pounds 19 inches long. Ava's parents are Carla Mendez and Shawan Parker. Ava was also the first recipient of the 2021 Power Bag, an initiative that began last year to provide resources and tools to encourage new parents to frequently read, speak, and interact with their babies beginning at birth. The contents of the 2021 Power Bag include a CDC Milestone Moments baby booklet, a power brochure, power tip sheet, baby's busy day book, Scholastic baby book, power magnet, power toy keys, and articles on brain development and the importance of reading to your child. For more information on power, visit www.powerbag.org. ORMC and Steward Healthcare are proud to partner with the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin and other community sponsors on this power initiative, said Stacy Brown, president of ORMC. It is incumbent upon us to help educate new parents on the importance of constant communication with their new baby from day one all the way through their childhood. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Editor's note, Ector County last updated COVID-19 numbers Tuesday afternoon. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 11,543. Ector County negative, 37,671 out of 49,695 tested, with 481 pending, 181 deaths. Recovered, 9,711. Active, 1,651. U.S. cases as of Thursday, 19,663,976 total confirmed, and 341,199 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Quick hits. Kids Art Contest. The Take Care of Texas Kids Art Contest runs from January 4th through March 5th. 2021. K-5 students in Texas are invited to enter their artwork. 6 students and 1 lucky teacher will win a tablet or laptop. To sign up or for more details, visit takecareoftexas.org/kids/k-5-art-contest. Blessing Meal. Highland United Methodist Church, 1808 North Dixie, and volunteers offer a backdoor blessing meal at 6 p.m. Wednesdays in the Fellowship Hall. There is no charge. Any donations contributed go toward Highlands Children's Ministries. Call 332-0261 or email highlandumc.odessa@gmail.com. or visit HighlandOdessa.com. Obituary for Saturday, January 2nd. Kenny Layton Ross. San Angelo. Kenny Layton Ross passed away Friday, December 25th at the age of 71. He was born to Kenneth Robert Ross and Othella Layton Ross, January 23rd, 1949, in Odessa. He married Pamela Ruth Baird in Odessa in 1969. He is survived by his wife of 51 years, Pam, his son Eric Ross and wife Monica of San Angelo, daughter Elisa Bird of San Angelo, 5 grandsons, 1 granddaughter, sister Gina Miller and husband Mark of Odessa, as well as nieces and nephews, a brother-in-law, Wes Baird and wife Shelley of Odessa. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to Hospice of San Angelo. Family and friends can share online condolences at www.harperfuneralhome.com. Death notices. Emil Beck. Emil Beck, 97, of Odessa, died Wednesday, December 30th in Arlington. A graveside service will be held at 3 p.m. January 2nd at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Ronald Hankins officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Everardo Bello. Everardo Bello, 60, of Odessa, died Saturday, December 26th. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Wednesday, January 6th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Hortensia Ramirez Hernandez. Hortensia Ramirez Hernandez, 74, died Sunday, December 20th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Bessie Mae Hunt. Bessie Mae Hunt, 101, died Saturday, December 26th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Alvaro Ramirez Mandujano. Alvaro Ramirez Mandujano, 76, of Cayenosa, died Wednesday, December 30th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 12 noon, January 5th, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine in Midland, with Father David Herrera officiating. Arrangements are by Willowbrook Funeral Home and Crematory Services of Midland. Cheryl Ann Nichols. Cheryl Ann Nichols, 66, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 22nd. A celebration of life will be held Sunday, January 3rd at Acres West Funeral Chapel, from 1 to 5 p.m. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Maria de Jesus Garcia Oviedo Castillo. Maria de Jesus Garcia Oviedo Castillo, 38, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 29th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Esmeralda Flores Rodriguez. Esmeralda Flores Rodriguez, 62, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 27th. Mass will be celebrated Saturday, January 2nd at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. The family has opted for cremation. Father Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Charlie Roman. Charlie Roman, 77, died Sunday, December 27th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Kenneth Dusty Sewell. Kenneth Dusty Sewell, 68, of Odessa, died Wednesday, December 30th. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. January 5th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Anna Elaine Etheridge Sparks. Anna Elaine Etheridge Sparks, 67, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 13th. A funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. January 12th at Crossroads Fellowship Church. Sunset Memorial Gardens pastors Donnie Williams and Griff Jones officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 3rd, 2021. Section A. Pfluger takes oath of office today. New congressman has legislation ready to be introduced. By Federico Martinez. Whether he was leading his beloved Central High School football team to victory as its quarterback or serving as a fighter pilot in the U.S. Air Force, August Pfluger has always demonstrated a strong desire to accomplish goals. Pfluger, who will be sworn into the House of Representatives for the Texas 11th District today, says he plans to bring that same lifelong tenacity to his new role as a congressman. Pfluger and other new House members are scheduled to take their oath of office during a noon to 4 p.m. ceremony today. I'm thrilled to have this opportunity, Pfluger said. It's about serving the community, the district, and the future of our country. His first priority will be to represent his constituents in West Texas, including Odessa and Midland. Within his first few days in office, Pfluger plans to introduce legislation to protect the oil industry, an integral part of the Permian Basin's economic health. The Permian Basin supplies 40% of this country's oil, Pfluger said. Within my first few days, I will introduce legislation to stop the radical left from destroying the industry. Pfluger said the oil industry provides about 2 million jobs for Texans. The majority of those jobs in the Permian Basin. We're talking about 2 million Texans whose livelihoods depend on it. The legislation I will be introducing will protect those jobs. For years, far-left liberal Democrats like Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, President-elect Joe Biden, and New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, OAC, have engaged in rhetoric in attempt to ban fracking, Pfluger said. Their rhetoric has no scientific facts to back it up, he added. We've been doing this for decades. It allows us to provide affordable energy to our country and the world. Born and raised in San Angelo, Pfluger earned a Bachelor of Science degree in Political Science from the United States Air Force Academy. He's also received a Master of Science degree in Aeronautical Science from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, a Master of Science in Military and Operations Science from Air University, and a Master of Science in International Business and Policy from Georgetown University. Pfluger earned his commission in the U.S. Air Force in 2000 and served in active duty for 20 years, flying F-22 fighter jets. He eventually reached the rank of lieutenant colonel. Pfluger, 42, replaces longtime Congressman Mike Conaway, who opted not to seek re-election after serving in the position for 8 terms. In August 2019, Pfluger was appointed to President Trump's National Security Council staff. In his role, Pfluger received the nation's highest security clearance and charged with advising the president on a host of foreign and domestic threats to the nation's security. He resigned from the NSC after 3 months to run for Conaway's seat, defeating 9 other Republican challengers. He defeated Democrat John Mark Hogg in the November general election. Pfluger takes office at a perilous time in the U.S., where COVID-19 and the federal government's response has prompted deep divisions between voters who say Trump and his administration has failed to adequately address the year-long pandemic. Avid supporters of Trump strongly disagree and have commended the president's efforts. President-elect Biden's presumed victory over Trump to become the next president has created an even bitterer divide, with Trump supporters claiming voter fraud and Biden supporters calling the claims baseless and sour grapes. Pfluger announced Friday that he plans to support an election challenge to the legitimacy of Biden's presumed general election victory over Trump. The U.S. House of Representatives will reconvene January 6th to vote whether to officially ratify election results. Pfluger said he will oppose ratification because he believes a thorough investigation of possible election fraud is needed before Biden is officially declared president. "It's an honor to be elected to Congress, but the weight of it is not lost on me," Pfluger said. "It's an important time in this country. When I made the decision to run for office, we didn't know what we would be facing, a pandemic and an election controversy. We took a step of faith that this was the path that God had laid out for us."
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.